to do here. We are at the start of Perek Yutet, chapter 19, and this chapter is really just, and this is gonna play out after Pesach for a few weeks. But this is a fast-moving chapter. There's a lot that is going on here. And in particular, we are going to see three people attempt to save David from Shaul. We already started on the first, and that's Yehonatan. Then we're going to see Michal. And then finally, we're going to see Shmuel. All three of them attempting to save David from Shaul. So the chapter began in sentence one. We saw it last week, with Shaul apparently coming out in the open with his intentions. Shaul tells Yonatan, and he tells his servants, "Lahamit et David," to kill David. We said last time that Barbanel takes that as an overt instruction, as does Malbim, but with the idea of make it look like an accident. He doesn't want it to be obvious. We talked about how we know that. And one of the key elements here, and something that's going to echo throughout the chapter, is that Shaul believes that everybody is on his side. So Shaul thinks that Yonatan is going to support him in this regard. Think undermining himself by saying this. Well, take a look at what happens here in Pasuk Bet in sentence two, and we find out that Shaul has miscalculated. Yonatan says to David, "My father Shaul wants to kill you." Note, Shaul Avi, my father. The relationship is not broken. He's still my father. That's going to matter. So, Ve'ata hishamer nava boker, v'yashavta baseiser v'nach besa. So he says, here's what I want you to do. I want you to stay, lie low in the morning, and hide. That's what I think you ought to do right now. And the Malbim says in the morning specifically, because this is a time of vulnerability, meaning Shaul is apt to go for you in the morning. Shaul is not going to attack you at night. He's going to try to take you in the morning before you are armed and ready. Why wouldn't Shaul attack at night? Why would Shaul wait till morning? Which in fact is what's going to happen later in the chapter. But why does Yonatan anticipate that David is safe overnight?
Is he with his wife?
Ah, so, yeah, the easy answer, before I get to Janine's answer, the easy answer would have been the home team has the advantage of knowing the territory. You invade someone's house, you're not in an advantage, certainly in the dark. However, I think Janine's point is very important as well, and we're going to see it emphasized later in the chapter, and that is that if you're attacking David at home, it's with Michal there, and maybe the goal is to spare Michal. Wait till the morning, we'll take him out of the house, and that way we'll hit him. Also reminiscent, by the way, with Shimshon, right? When Shimshon is in Aza at the house of the Zonah, also they're lying in wait in ambush outside waiting for morning in order to attack. Yes, Eti.
Also, if you attack somebody in his own house, then it's premeditated murder. But if he's outside, it could be made as an accident.
Right. Definitely a piece of this as well, is that Shaul isn't, at least as we understand it, trying to make it obvious. That is definitely important here. I would agree. So Yonatan says to him, Pasuk Gimel, Va'ani Eitze, I'm gonna go out, this is in the morning, Ve'amadati liyad avi basadeh asherat hasham, and I will stand beside my father, is what it sounds like here. Beside my father. Basadeh asherat hasham, in the field where you are. Vani adaber b'chay elavi, and I am going to speak to dad about you. Ra'isi mavi gadati lach, and I'll see what's what. And then I'll tell you. Okay. There's actually quite a bit going on in this sentence. Yes, Ricky.
What is Shaul doing in his sade? Well, shouldn't he be in his palace or something?
So clearly not. Yonatan is going to go to, well, let me say this a little bit differently. Your translations, in sentence 3, when he says, the beginning of the sentence, I will go out and stand, what are the next words?
I don't have translation.
Say that again, Nati.
Beside my father in the field where thou art.
Yeah, so that's basically the way most commentators take it. Anybody have anything different? No? Okay. Radak says it could mean something else. I'm going to remind you of a phrase that we looked at back in Perek Tedvav in chapter 15. When Shmuel is going looking for Shaul. Vihine matlo. Next word? Matziv lo. Thank you. Chana says it, but she's muted. Yad. Matziv lo yad. Vayisov vayavor, etc. He set up a yad for himself, and we had a discussion. Is that a mizbeach? Is it a monument? Is it a place to divide spoils? Well, Radak says, not liyad avi. I'm going to stand beside my father. I'm going to stand at the yad of my father, the place where my father goes. There was a place out in the field that Shaul used to go to, maybe to contemplate, maybe because of his rach ra'ah that he's dealing with, that has him so upset, he wants to get air. But he had an outdoor area that he would go to. And Yonatan says, that's where I'm going to go, this known space, in order to talk to my father. But what's even more interesting here, in this sentence, and you have to love Malbim in order to really appreciate this, is the phrase that he uses after that. He says, Va'ani adaber becha el avi. Before you look at Malbim on the sheet, what should have been after the word adaber instead of becha?
Ito. Aleha. No.
Alecha. Or bishvilcha, maybe ba'avurcha. I'm going to speak about you, for you. Dibart becha. What does that even mean? I'm going to speak in you? What is that? So Malbim says, you got to know your Hebrew and you have to know its use biblically. He says, the phrase ledaber be is negative. Whenever you see in the Torah, ledaber be, it's a negative. Take a look at source number 1 on your sheet. He says, Da, you have to know, Shekol dibur sheba acharav kishur habet. When you see the word dalet bet resh, this verb that we're using for speech here, followed by the connecting letter bet as the prefix to the next word, more al shemidaber ra al chaveiro. That indicates that one is speaking negatively about the other. Kimo, and he gives you examples. Vatadaber Miriam ve'Aharon b'Moshe. So it's a negative speech about Moshe. Dibarnu b'Hashem vavach. When the Jews first complain against God and then Hashem sends the serpents, Parshas Chukas, and the Jews apologize, they say, Dibarnu b'Hashem Vavach, we spoke against Hashem and against you. Ubiyarnu zehitev makom acher. He says we've explained this fully elsewhere, which I don't doubt. Rotzel omar, so he says, let me apply it here. Ani adaber alecha ra. I'm going to say bad things about you to my father. Ve'ereh im yaskim avi, and I'll see if my father goes along with it. Val yidei zeh yivadali ha'emes asher bilavavo, and then I'll be able to tell. It's a sting. I'm going to talk negatively about you to my father, and then we'll see. He's not saying I'm going to say nice things about you. He's saying I'm going to say bad things about you. Parenthetically, this idea that Malbim suggests is a Gemara. I was very surprised that he didn't actually bring the Gemara. In source number 2, Vayahas Kalev Es Ha'am El Moshe. After the spies come back, and they're saying terrible things, so Kalev starts to speak up. And you get this very odd word, the verb, vayahas. Sounds like hissing, you know? Vayahas, Kalev et ha'am el Moshe. He, whatever yahas is, has, is the nation to Moshe. Amar Rabba she sisan bidvarim. Rabba said he seduced them. Lahasit, to seduce verbally. What does that mean? Pasach Yoshua de Kamishtoi. First Yoshua started talking to the Meraglim. Amrile, and they said to him, Dein Rosh Kitia Yamalel, should this one with the cut off head speak? And the idea there is Yoshua doesn't have children. They later there will be descendants, but at this stage at least he's understood as not having children, and therefore he has no stake in the land, and therefore who is he to tell us that we should go into the land? Amar, so Kalev says, Imishtaina, if I speak, Amri Beimilsa, the Chasminli, they're gonna find something to say against me also, and they'll muzzle me too. They didn't listen to Yoshua, they're not gonna listen to me. So Amar Lahen, so Kalev tries the opposite tactic. V'chizo bilvad asalanu ben Amram. Is this, meaning bringing us here to fight against the Canaanites, is that all the son of Amram did to us? Which sounds like it's going to be negative. Even the use of the phrase son of Amram is something that you see rabbinically used in Medrash, usually, not always, but usually, by someone who wants to belittle or denigrate Moshe. So Savri, Biganusei Kamishtoi. Everybody thought, he's going to say something negative about Moshe. Ishtiku, so they were silent. Let's hear. Amar lehu, and then he says, Hotzianu mi Mitzrayim, v'kara lanu es hayam, v'hechilanu es haman. He did all these things that, you know, God takes credit for in the Haggadah, but fine. The Moshe did all these wonderful things on our behalf. Im yomar asu sulamos v'lule rakiel onishmalo. If he were to say, make ladders and go up to the heavens, would we not listen to him? My point in bringing this Gemara, this is not a case of the Daber bit. It's the Daber El. It's El Moshe. But my point here is that we're identifying the same tactic of starting with the negative and then turning to the positive. And we'll see how that plays out in the next few psukim as Yehonatan speaks to Shaul. We'll see how he actually does it. Last note here, relatively minor note, although it may come back to us in chapter 20. What exactly is David doing out in the field?
He's a soldier.
No, he's hiding, right? He's hiding. In sentence two, he was told to hide. So I'm going to go and stand at my father's place or beside my father in the field where you are located. What's David doing there?
Hiding.
Hiding, yes. But why is he going to stand with him near David? Leona points to her ear. So he can hear. Right? He'll be able to overhear. Right? That's the idea.
David will overhear?
Yes. So I would think, what's the problem with that explanation? The end of the sentence.
If it is a field, then I think it would be visible to show.
So it must have standing grain or something to hide in, I would guess, because no one in this story is going to actually point him out and say, hey, what are you doing there? But the end of the sentence, he says.
If he can hear, then why does Yonatan have to come back and tell him what happened?
Right. What's Vihi Gadatilach at the end of the sentence? I'm going to tell you. What are you telling me? He already hears. And not only that, but look at what's actually going to happen. In sentences 4, 5, 6, Shaul and Yonatan are going to have their conversation. And then in sentence 7, Vayikra, Yonatan le David, Vayageid lo Yonatan, it's called Ramaela. Yonatan's going to call David, he's going to tell him everything that David presumably just overheard. So I don't understand. What are you doing? So Radak says that the idea is that David should overhear, but maybe he won't really be able to hear from where he is. But that's a difficult answer, because that's what Yonatan should have said then. And he immediately goes to tell David, which makes it sound like, no, David did not overhear. So Abarbanel says that David isn't there to overhear. David is there just to be available for follow-up after the conversation. In other words, I want you near at hand, so I'll be able to give you this information while it's still hot, so to speak. Claudette, that's what you're going to say?
And also maybe to reassure David that this conversation is happening, even though he
can't hear it.
Mm-hmm. Right.
They are together.
But I have a question about this.
Yeah.
Yonatan knows that because the pasuk before it says that Shaul told his people that he wants David dead. So Yonatan knows that. So what's the purpose in him praying on his father?
Because he wants to. Well, you'll see what he's going to say to his father. Once you see what he says to his father, I think you'll see. Yeah. The one other possibility for what he's doing here, and this may be what Claudette was saying also, actually, is that he wants David there in order to demonstrate that he's working for David. In other words, to earn his trust, effectively. It's one thing to say to somebody, I'm going to take care of it. I'm going to talk to someone for you. It's another thing for them to see that you're actually doing it. And I wonder if that isn't part of it, because you're going to see play out over the next couple of chapters an issue of whether David can trust Yehonatan or not. So you'll see that play out, and maybe that's a piece of what's going on. Okay. Yes, Leona. Yep.
By everybody, by the nation, he is cheered and rallied. So if he kills David, is he anticipating he'll still begin because the heir presumptive is no longer a threat? I don't think he's that stupid to think that Hashem now will say, oh, because he killed David, I'm going to keep his line as king. It doesn't make any sense to me.
So I don't know that, I would characterize that as stupid. Meaning,
I don't know if it's much. I don't understand this. What is this part of his illness? I don't know.
I think that it's two things. Number one, it's living in the past, meaning he was king and everybody loved him, and he's remembering that. Number one, and number two, we're seeing described here a level of irrationality. And I think that's a piece of it. I don't think it's a lack of intelligence, but I think that there's a lack of rationality. He, as I said before, absolutely believes that Yehonatan is going to choose him over David. And by the way, he's not wrong. Wait and see. He believes that in the end, everyone's going to come back to him the way he was, and the relationships will be restored. That's absolutely what he believes. He believes in the power of tshuva. That's fundamentally what this is about. Now, it's a little bloodier form of tshuva than we're used to thinking about, you know. But that's his belief, I think so. Jeanette, you have your hand up.
Yeah, I don't think it's that outlandish. I think, you know, to a certain extent he's living in the past, but there's a difference. First of all, he's not planning on killing himself in front of everybody in a way that it's going to be so clear. He still believes his son loves him over David. That's not unreasonable. He still thinks his daughter loves him over David. That's not unreasonable. He still thinks he has a certain amount of loyalty. I mean, there is a little bit of being unreasonable, but I don't think it's so unreasonable at this point, the people that he is approaching, that he feels he can trust and
right.
Has their loyalty.
Right. I see Claudette and I see Ruth. I just wanted to add a note. I'm just floating this. It occurred to me as Jeanette was speaking. Realistically, keep in mind the region of the world where this conversation is taking place. This is the Middle East. And what you know about the Middle East today, or much of it, was definitely true back then. Which is, if you have somebody sitting on the throne, and they killed the person you liked, but now they're the one on the throne, guess who gains your loyalty and the authority? Whoever's sitting on the throne wins. That's the way it works. I wonder how much of that is involved here. Claudette and then Ruth.
Shaul, to me, is behaving like a politician where his ego has taken over. You know, and if that whatever he does, it's going to work out in his favor.
So,
because like you said, he will remain on the throne if he kills somebody because everybody's interfering.
So the only problem I have with that idea is just that we never see Ego in Sheol. Meaning he doesn't talk that way, he doesn't act that way, he remains the person who, in the very beginning, was hiding when they went to get him. He loves power, which he did not in those days. You know, that's something that's really changed with him.
But isn't that Ego to love power so much that you want to hold on to it?
I would look at it as the opposite. I would look at it as, well, it depends on how you characterize ego. I guess it's a psychological question. But what I'm seeing is insecurity. Yeah, that's what I'm seeing. Ruth?
Well, did he know how close Yonatan and Dawit were?
He saw it.
Was it obvious to people, or was it, did they just sort of make it plan that trip?
The way it was presented in the beginning of chapter 18 was that he was actually present. When Yehonatan gave him his weapons and gave him his me'il and all of that, we discussed why it was written that way in the beginning, but at least one way to read it, and I think the dominant way to read it, is that Sheol was there. Sheol knows, and in fact, we even said that he saw it, right? That was one of the things that upset Sheol, was that he saw the love. We know, we said about the love of Michal upsetting him. Did we say about the love of Yehonatan? We'd have to really go back and take a look and see which pieces were mentioned as causing Shaul's anger. We'd have to go back and really look through more carefully. Yeah, not so clear. Not so clear. Okay. So let's see what happens. Let's see what he actually says to him. But yeah, Shaul is... There's no way around the fact that Sheol is deteriorating. Things are getting worse. He is now overt in his animosity to David. He's telling other people, this is what we have to do to harm David. And he is gambling on Yehonatan being an ally. That's a big gamble. So let's see what happens. The next few sentences 4-7, take place apparently on the morning after Yehonatan found out about the threat to David. And Yehonatan is going to try to convince Shaul to spare David, and then he'll let David know, guess what, I succeeded. Don't worry about it. You can call off the rest of the book. We're fine. Pasuk Dalet. Vayidaber Yehonatan b'David tov el Shaul aviv. Yehonatan spoke of David good to his father Shaul. Notice, by the way, again, aviv. There's that relationship once again being emphasized. And he says something good. Now, he says, Bid David, so Malum is going to have to explain that. Hang in there. Vayomer Elav, Al yechet ha-melech be'avdo v'David. Oh, the king should not sin against his servant David. Notice how he's framing it, right? Melech Eved. You're the king, he's the servant. You should not harm David. Ki lo chatalach, he didn't do anything to you. And just the opposite, the things he does are good for you. He took his life in his hands. That's the phrase. And he struck the Philistine. And God performed this great salvation for all Israel. You saw it and you rejoiced. We didn't actually see him rejoice, but you could kind of assume that he rejoiced. Why would you sin? There's that word again. Why would you sin against innocent blood to kill David? For nothing. He didn't do anything to you. That's his plea on behalf of David. Before we see Shaul's response, the standard... Hang on.
Did he say he's going to speak negatively about David?
So hang in there. Hang in there. The standard reads of the text. Look at this as playing up the merits of David, right? They read it the way they, I think, you know, we would kind of assume. However, take a look at Malbim in source number 3, where Malbim explains how this works. He says, "Sheitchil hadibur bignai." He started out by mocking David, by degrading David. What do you mean? Because it says, "Vayidaber bit." It said he spoke bit. That's got to be negative. Limashal, for example, he gives you a possibility. His chalemor ki David hu ish mafkir et chayav. He began by saying, you know, David is somebody who abandons his own life. He puts himself in danger. He goes racing out to fight that big Goliath. Shezet ain ra'oy le'ish yashar. That's not what an upstanding person does. V'davar zeh hayatov el Shaul aviv. As the wording in the sentence goes, right? Tov el Shaul aviv. What he said was good to Shaul, not he spoke about David being good to Shaul, his father. He spoke about David in a way that appealed to Shaul, his father. Rotzel Amar, Shotav Be'enav, meaning it was good in his eyes. He starts out by saying that David, he's such a reckless person. Ve'achar Shepasach Bignus, having started in a way that degraded David, Sivev HaDavar, he turned it, Vayomer Elav, and he said, Im kein al yechta melech be'avdo b'David. Well, then the king should not sin against his servant David. Achar shehu ish misakein nafsho ba'avorcha tamid. Because you know what he does to endanger himself. He does it, he endangers himself for you. He's doing this in order to help you, O king. Hagam shezeh davar ra mitzad atzmo limsor es atzmo l'sakanos. Granted, it's bad for him to endanger himself, put himself in danger. V'hu chata neged atzmo, he's sinning against himself. Al kopanim lo chata lach, he didn't sin against you. U'behefech, ma'asav tov loch me'o, just the opposite. What he does is very good for you. David is helping you. So the way Malbim reads it is, it does indeed start out negatively about David, and he's using that tactic in order to get Shaul on his side. He should have been a telemarketer. You know, he's got it down. He's got this down. By the way, Mitzidat David has a suggestion. I was bothered by that phrase. You know, even though we use the phrase taking one's life in one's hands or putting one's life in somebody's hands, I wasn't comfortable with how that works. What does that mean? Just what are the words mean in the beginning of sentence 5? Vayasem es nafsho bechapo. So Mitzidat David says, your kaf is your open hand. So he says, something that you're holding out in an open hand is something you're apt to lose. So like he put it out there on his hand where it's exposed and potentially vulnerable. That's how Mitzidat David renders it. So that's the sales pitch. That's Yonatan's pitch to his father. So if I were to pause here and take a poll of whether we thought this was going to work, it would be interesting. But since most people here have read ahead, I'm not going to bother with the poll. Let's just see what happens. Pasuk Vav, sentence 6. Vayishma Shaul b'kol Yehonatan. Shaul heard what Yehonatan said. Vayishava Shaul, and Shaul swore, Chai Hashem im Yumat. He swears by God, David is not going to be killed. Isn't that interesting? That's something you could vote on. How serious do you think he is? Is this for real? Is Shaul sincere and supported?
He's a politician. They're never sincere.
Well, he's a politician who doesn't have an election, but yeah.
But if he swears in the name of Hashem, I think it's sincere.
Right. So swearing in the name of God tends to be something sincere. The fact that he uses Hashem's name sounds like it is it is sincere. Take a look at Abarbanel in source 4. He offers you both options. V'hine, inyan shvuat Shaul yera eshay sala achas mishtei sibos. He says it appears that the oath is for one of two reasons. Imshen is charet mikavanaso hara'ah v'ra'adiv reyonas antovim unuchochim. Could be that he really recanted. He regretted his evil intent. He saw that Yonatan was right. V'lachein asa shavua shalo yitzaveh olahargo. And therefore he swore, I'm not going to kill him. Aval, the problem is, ha'kavana ha'tova ha'hi lo hitzmida imo ki miyad chazar lemaste maso. Right? The problem is, it didn't stick. Because he has this ruach ra'ah, and he backslides and goes back to the antagonism for David. That's one explanation. Hang on, Leona. V'imsha sa'a k'desh yonatan lo yeda kavanaso. Alternatively, no. Maybe he wasn't serious to begin with. Maybe he did this so that Yonatan wouldn't know his intent. V'yagida le David and tell David l'shiyivrach milafanav, such that David could flee. Ubazela yuchalo lahakoso, and then he wouldn't be able to strike David. So he recognizes that Yonatan is not on his side, and he says, "Well, I better lie to him then." Said he won't know what I'm planning. Yes, Leona.
I can see both sides of the story, and there are two sides of the thing. However, just to be a little more generous towards Saul Shaul at this particular time, if you look at the next section,
yeah. They
go out to David leads battle again. There's another battle, and he is again vastly superior and kills all of them, and he's once again this major hero who comes back to play for the king afterwards. And the king, now the old feelings of jealousy, resentful, panic, return. He could have been very sincere at that moment, but the sequence of events following the battle caused him to regress to his former state.
Absolutely.
We don't know.
Right, absolutely possible. Take a look at source number 10 for a minute, please, just because that's where we're going to see Abarbanel make that point. He says, and he's not the only one to say it, but he's the one who I brought on the sheet. V'havein, he says, you have to understand, ki chol ha'pa'amim shaya mis'ower Sha'ul laharog es David, whenever Sha'ul was aroused to kill David, lo haya ki imbir oso matzliach u'maskil b'dvar ma'asher ya'aseh, it was always because he saw David succeeding at something. Then he thought about this. David is so successful. Re'acha tov mimecha, going to be replaced by the one who's better than me. U'biasasa ruach ra'ah, and the ruach ra'ah frightened him. U'v'chol ha'dvarim ha'ela lo nesano Hashem la'ra'as David. But in all of this, God doesn't let him actually succeed. David still escapes. But it's exactly Leona's point. He could be 100% sincere here, and yet backslide later. One other note, I have to give credit here to Rav Bazak for this one. I would not have noticed this myself. Take a look at the language again in sentence 5. Don't look at source number 5 on your sheet yet, please. I know some of you look at the sources ahead, which is a good thing to do. But if you looked at source number 5, don't say anything. He put his life in his hand. He struck the Philistine. Vayas Hashem tshua gedola l'chol Yisrael. What does that phrase remind you of? Does it remind you of anything?
Yeah, she like the yam. After the yam soup.
Oh, that's interesting. Vayosha Hashem. Okay, what else? What else from Shmuel? That's harder.
When Shaul came back from hitting the Naaman.
Yeah. So go to chapter 11, sentences 12 to 13. Chana got one of them. This is actually the third appearance of this phrase or a phrase like it. But the one we need right now is indeed the one that Chana just mentioned. Remember that when Shaul was appointed king, that not everybody was happy about that. The people wanted a king. Shmuel was supposed to identify a king for them. Shmuel came back with Shaul and everybody said, who, this guy? He has no allies, he has no wealth. How in the world is he going to be the one to save us? Then Nachash of Ammon attacks the people of Yavesh Gilad. The people of Yavesh Gilad appeal to Shaul for help. Shaul rallies the nation. Everybody better come fight in order to defend the people of Yavesh Gilad. And they rout Ammon. And then you get, in chapter 11, sentence 12. At that point, the people say to Shmuel, Miha omer Shaul yimloch aleinu, tenuha anashim unumisem. If anybody says, Shaul is going to rule over us, meaning if anybody questions that Shaul should be king, ha, we're going to kill them. Vayomer Shaul, and Shaul says, Lo yumas ish bayom hazeh. No one should be killed on this day, ki hayom asa Hashem tshua, be Israel, because today Hashem performed a salvation for Israel. So Shaul says, don't kill anybody because Hashem created Chua on this day. Anybody remember the other use? Alina, you're talking, but you're muted.
Is that the story where Yonatan had the honey?
Correct.
And they were going to kill him. I can't remember. I'm not sure.
Chapter 14, end of the chapter. Good. Chapter 14, sentence 45. Yonatan was the one who started to rout the Plishtim, the Philistines. Then the people pursued the battle against the Plishtim. The Plishtim were fleeing, and the Jews went after them. And Shaul declared, we discussed why, but Shaul declared a fast. No one should eat anything during the war. Yonatan was unaware. Yonatan is pursuing the Plishtim. He takes a little bit of honey out in the field, puts it in his mouth, and he's spotted doing so. He is told, hey, your father said that no one should be eating. He says, I didn't know anything. That's a terrible idea. And then he's brought up on charges for having eaten. And Shaul says he should die. Right? Shaul, what happens is Shaul wants to pursue the battle further. He asks the Urim Batumi, he doesn't get an answer. He realizes something is wrong. And as most commentators, other than Abarbanel, read the story, he determines that Yonatan is in fact the guilty party. Abarbanel has this other take possibly that Shaul is the guilty party, but I'm not going there right now. So the people defend Yonatan in Pasuk Memhei, sentence 45. Vayomer ha'am el Shaul. The nation said to Shaul, "Hayonasan yamus asher asa hayeshua hagidola hazos biYisrael. Should Yonatan die? He performed this yeshua gidola, this great salvation in Israel. And they swear that nothing should be done to him, and he is redeemed." And we had a lot of discussion about this back in chapter 14. I'm not going through that whole discussion again now. But the interestingly, this is one of those things you can do when you have a Bar Ilan database, or other database presumably, but the Bar Ilan is the one that I use. I did a search through Tanakh to try to find the terms Yeshua Gedolah or Tishua Gedolah. The first one that we mentioned didn't have Gedolah. The one in Yud Aleph just said Chua. But Yeshua Gedolah, Chua Gedolah only show up in these cases and in two other appearances, which are both for David's warriors fighting against the Plishtim. They're both in Shmuel Bet, Perek Chav Gimel. Interesting side note. So what's the significance? We have three different uses of this phrase, Tshu'a Gedolah. What is that about? Nanette.
Oh, I'm sorry. I wanted to give one. May I go back just very quickly?
To which part?
With respect to the issue of think that Yonatan says initially to David that he's going to speak early. Your point about, you know, that that's going to be...
Oh, let's just go through this first and then come back to that.
Sure.
Okay? Remind me if I don't come back to you, but... Okay, thank you. So, Rav Bazak argues that the idea is that having Tshu'a Gedolah, this great salvation, is grounds for not killing David because it demonstrates divine favor. The fact that God works through him demonstrates divine favor. In source number 6, I just gave you the title of Rav Bazak's article. You can find it if you look online. It's on the Gush Etzion website. But I think that's very similar to something that Abarbanel said back in chapter 11 in the war with Ammon. Take a look at source number 7. Hebrew's the bottom of one side, English is the top of the next side. Im heyos mehadin, shamavazeez hamelach yumat. Granted that letter of the law, you mock the king by saying, who is this guy Shaul that should reign over us? That's a death sentence. Hine ein ra'ui shebayom hazeh yumas ish lefisha al yadam asa Hashem tshua. Shaul says, Hashem saved us in the merit of the nation. They're the ones. It's their merit that earns us the victory. Claudette, that's an example of Shaul not having the ego, but saying it's the nation that did it. That's part of Shaul's fine nature, that the nation says, we won because of Shaul. And Shaul says, no, it was because of the nation. But the point here is, the idea that I'm proposing is that, and that Rav Bazak is really proposing, is that is that Yonatan is saying, if God works miracles for us via David, then that's a sign that God likes him, and we should not be attacking him. Similarly, Ramban If you take a look at source number 8, he's commenting on it from the story with Yehonatan and the honey. Ba'avur she'iran nes al yad'o, since a miracle happened via him, yad'u ki b'shogeg asa. They knew that Yehonatan must have only eaten by accident. Otherwise, God would not have made him succeed. And that's why they say, Asher asa Yeshua gedola hazo b'Yisrael. And finally, in source number 9, I also brought you a barbanel on Yehonatan's Yehonatan's rescue by the nation, where he says, "Sheim Elokim asa yom hazeh." He acted with God on this day. Rotzalomar shelo ayu ma'asa b'chet u'ba'avon. There was no sin in what he did. Avomasha asame ha'achila imho Elokim u'ba'hashkachaso asa'o. What he did in eating was all under God's oversight. And further, God wanted him to eat. V'imkein eino ben mavet. V'zele va'er shim Yehonatan achal ha'lokim nesano b'libo. If he ate, it's because God wanted him to. God gave him that thought of eating. L'fi sha'or einav lo hayu ito. Because he was weak. He needed to be able to eat in order to do this. So that's their argument in that story, and that's the argument of Yehonatan here. But I want to point something out. Claudette, I see your hand, and I still have to come back to Nanette. But I want to make an important point here. Because I think that, first of all, actually, it's 2 points. Number one, supporting this read is the fact that they emphasize, go back to our parak now, chapter 19, and look at what Yehonatan said. He said, David endangered himself. We're in sentence 5. David struck the Plishti, and God performed this Tshu'ah Gedolah L'chol Yisrael, demonstrating that Hashem sees David as his agent. But what the second and big point that I wanted to make out of this is, unfortunately, Yehonatan is preaching to the choir. Shaul already believes this, that God favors David. And that's why he's attacking him. That's exactly the point. If God doesn't like David, then Shaul has no reason to kill him. The whole point is, Re'acha hatov mimecha. He is the guy God likes more than me. So, you know, I mean, you can go back to Cain and Hevel. If God doesn't accept Hevel's carbon, Cain has no reason to kill him. That's the problem. So, you know, Yehonatan says to Shaul, that which is causing you to kill him is the reason you should leave him alone. But you could understand if Shaul in his head is thinking, no, that's not the reason to leave him alone at all. So you can see where this goes. Okay, Claudette on this, and then Nanette with the point you were going to make before. Claudette, you're muted. Yeah, there you go.
Yeah, what you just said is where I'm at, because I'm confused, because I can't understand Shaul's behavior if he recognized that God is with me. So where is his relationship with God if he is behaving against God in his whole...
Right, and the answer really is, and this is what we keep saying, because this question keeps coming up for us, is that he believes that God has abandoned him. God was with me. He left me to go be with David. If I get rid of David, the nation is going to continue on with me as king, and I'll just continue to be king, and God will come back to me. That's, I mean, painful to say, but that's what it sounds like, yes. Nanette.
Your first point about the idea that Yonatan's plan to David is to speak negatively as a ruse. And actually, that would have been successful had he actually done it. And the fashion that I think that would have been perhaps successful and allowed Saul not to relent to his Yetzer Ra is if his son had said to him, "You have nothing to worry from David. You are greater than David. You are finer than David. David, you were chosen first." Like in the sense that he should have propped him up
as a way, as part of speaking negatively about David. Mm-hmm. You know, David was only successful because you had the war plan. David was only successful because you sought him out. You know, like you laid the foundation, like whatever. If he had spoken to him as a sort of in an honorable fashion as his father being the leader, it would have been a way of denigrating David, mm-hmm. but in a way that would have been sort of loyal to his dad.
Well, do you not see that in sentence 4 when he specifically addresses his father as the king and labels David as the servant? In other words, he's asserting that relationship.
Yes. I agree, but I think it should have continued. Like, as opposed to saying, he took his life in his hands and killed the Philistine, you chose him to take, you know, you chose him.
But you didn't. Shaul didn't choose him.
Right. But that would have been part of the plot.
Mm-hmm.
That he would have propped up his father.
Yeah. As opposed to
going into detail about all the deeds that David did.
I think from a psychological perspective, I hear that could succeed. But he already did, you know, unless I read it with a Barbanel's more suspicious read, the text seems to say he succeeded in any case. Shaul took an oath. It's just that all the arguments in the world are going to fall apart the next time he sees David succeed, like Leona pointed out. David is going to be more successful in the future, you know, unless Yonatan is going to be standing by his side constantly trying to remind him of the arguments that worked the first time. And we'll see Yonatan try, in fact. Yonatan's not done with Shaul in this regard. But these, ultimately, it's a losing battle. You know? The old psychology joke, right? How many psychologists does it take to change a light bulb?
How many?
First, the light bulb has to want to change.
Right, okay.
So, the same thing is true regarding Shaul. He doesn't want to change. He wants to be king.
Speaking of psychologically, this thing of David's success is called a trigger. There's nothing you can do when you have a trigger and somebody sets it off. So nobody's going to win here because it's always going to be Shaul's trigger having David succeed.
Yeah.
Oh. You know, it's funny, just to, further to what Annette was saying, when I first heard what Yonatan said, when I read what Yonatan said after you explained what the Becha meant,
yeah.
And all of a sudden I'm seeing it in a different light, so I'm trying to think to myself, how does this fit in, you know, with it being negative? And I thought exactly what Annette said just now, that maybe even though he's pretending, even though he's seeming to talk well about David, he's really saying everything that he knows is going to trigger his father. So I kind of heard that, even with the evidence, that was my first thought, mm-hmm. that this was
he's actually undermined his own point. Maybe.
But then they had the word toad, which throws the whole thing off.
Okay. Leona. You're muted.
I just unmuted. Okay. I hear all of this. I'm also kind of, I know it's being pedantic, but the both and the negative, I'm just wondering, could it be both a negative and a positive? In other words, when you're speaking about somebody personally rather than something generally, a group of people, you're talking about assets or faults of anybody, that you refer to it as the book, because I don't know how many other times in the Tanakh or in the Torah itself, the book is used negatively. For example, when Malvim justifies it by saying that, you know, Eved and all that, that could only be Yonatan trying to show that he, as father, is still the king. And in spite of everything, David is just an enemy to him.
So,
you know, what are you getting all worked up about this simple person for? I think it's part of the whole way to convince thing. I don't see the book as a negative. Here.
So I'm gonna say two things. Number one, I did not go looking to see, you know, where else this this formulation is used to figure out whether, you know, whether it's consistent across. It is an idea that seems to fit in general terms. Having said that, as you said it, so I started thinking, and I remembered a pasuk in Yirmiyahu. Havein yakir li Ephraim yeled sha'ashuim ki midei dabri bo zachor ezkirenu o. That's a bih with a daber. So as I'm talking to you, I am looking at my Bar Ilan, which has Malbim. And sure enough, Malbim says on that, midei da, here I'll share the screen so that everybody can see it. Hang on. Okay, so it's at the bottom of the screen. Habein yakili afran ki midei dabri bo zachor ezkirenu. Kol dibur sha'acharav bet hu lignai. There you go again. Anytime you see dibur with a bet after it, that is derogatory. Gam ve'eish sha'adaber bo eze genus. He says, even if I am speaking negatively about Ephraim, Hashem says, even when I am speaking negatively about the Jews, nonetheless, zachor ez kor od ma'alosav mitzad Jehu yakar. I'll remember his value. I remember what's good about him, and that will be the stronger influence. So the answer to your question, Leona, is you reminded me of a case that I thought would be proof against. Apparently, Malbim is a step ahead, and he thought of that case, and he's already got his answer. So the challenge would then be to come up with a case he can't solve. As we saw when we discussed Chemla in the war with Amalek, and his definition of Chemla as being not mercy, but instead a tactical decision, we said, yeah, but what about? There are cases that don't seem to fit. I suspect eventually we'll find one that doesn't fit. But this is his philosophy, and I think it's a very interesting read of what Yonatan is doing. Chana?
Actually, with Yirmiyahu, it really fits, because in the time of Yirmiyahu, there's a lot of bad to speak about.
Yes.
About Ephraim in those days, so it makes sense.
Oh, no, that part of it does, but if I wanted to read that line straight without knowing Malbim, I could read it straight without that Malbim. Totally. Okay. So let's see what happens. We have an oath. What happens afterwards? Well, we know. Pasuk Chet, sentence 8. David does what David always does. Actually, first, sorry, Pasuk Zion. Vayikra Yonatan LaDavid. Yonatan calls David after, you know, his conversation with his father. Vayagidlo Yonatan es kol eis kol adverim ha'ela. Yonatan tells him all this stuff. Vayave Yonatan es David al Shaul. Yonatan brings David to Shaul. Vayilafanav kesmol shilshom. And he's with him just like yesterday, the day before. David goes back to work in the palace, which I find a little shocking. Nonetheless, Vatosef Hamilcham Alehios. But keep in mind, David has not witnessed anything yet. Right now, all David knows is that Yonatan told him his father is dangerous, and Yonatan told him his father is not dangerous anymore. False alarm. So Vatosef Hamilcham Alehios. But the war keeps on going with the Plishtim. Right? Because remember, as Malbim says, this is still part of the revenge of the Plishtim for that gift that David gave to Shaul. So an indefinite period of time is now passing after Shaul has sworn not to harm David, and the war is ongoing. And Vayetze David Vayilachem Ba'Plishtim. David went out and fought the Plishtim. Vayachbem Makah Gedola. Very successful. Vayanusumi panav, and they fled. Vatihi, because the Plishtim never learned. Vatihi ruach Hashem ra'ah el Shaul. Sure enough, Shaul experiences ruach ra'ah. Abarbanel makes his comment. David's success leads to Shaul's jealousy. V'hu beveso yoshev. He's sitting in his palace. V'chani so biyado, and he has his spear in hand. V'david minagein bayad, and David is again playing the instrument. And Shaul wants to strike with the spear through David right to the wall. That's a phrase we've seen before. And David leaves from before Shaul. Vayiftar, right? Peitet resh, like we use the term for someone to be niftar. David leaves from before Shaul. Vayaches hachanis bakir. The spear just hits blank wall. V'David nas vayimaleit balaylo hu. And David escapes. Malbim characteristically has a whole discussion about the difference between the word nas and himalait and barach and all the different words you can use for flight, which are going to show up here in this perek. Radak simply says, nas vayimalait, nas. He fled at that time. And then vayimalait is what's coming next because he's going to escape from his father's plan coming next. So now David knows, and not only from Yonatan saying something to him, but from his own experience, that Shaul really is trying to kill him, and the oath is, this phrase doesn't really work with the next part of the story, but the oath is out the window. That's where things are headed. Shaul is now exposed to David for who he is. Clear? Okay. Yes, Claudette.
From this chapter 16-17, I've been having a problem with this statement that the evil spirit of the Lord, you know, I've been having a problem. And just a minute ago, while reading it again and you explaining, I came to the conclusion that all of our emotions are from God. It's how we behave and how we change it and work it.
That's a big statement for 3 minutes to go. I'm not prepared for that one. I mean,
it's just that I feel that, you know, this has been bothering me because I make lots of notes in my Tanakh about this, and I'm thinking, how can this evil spirit from God? And then I realized a few minutes ago that our anger, it's all made up as a human being. We have all these traits, and we need to work on them.
That's for sure. That's for sure. I favor on Ruach Ra'ah what Abarbanel said back when it first showed up, which is the lack of experience of Ruach Hashem, the lack of what he had had before, the absence of the feeling of closeness to God, is what is driving him. And that's what's known as the Ruach Ra'ah, both when it says Ruach Elohim Ra'ah and when it just says Ruach Ra'ah. That's what I'm seeing.
It could come in a form of jealousy. Anger, all these things, right?
Yep. Yeah. Well, I hate to tell you.
Please repeat the definition of Ruach object, right? It's the lack of experience.
It's the lack of the closeness of Hashem, the association with Hashem that came with Ruach Hashem earlier, the law, or Ruach Elohim, the loss of that, the absence of that, is what triggers his feelings of depression and abandonment and jealousy. Yeah, that's what I'm seeing here. Sandra?
I was just wondering, why would Shaul be sitting in his house holding his spear? Wouldn't that be a hint to David that something was amiss?
So the spear seems to always be at hand, because this isn't the first time we've seen it, right? We saw him with the spear previously. The commentators do suggest that he has it with him not by chance, but really a king having a weapon by his side strikes me as a good idea normally. You know, I mean,
house, right? You'd think he'd be wearing his slippers and relaxed and.
Right. I guess I imagine it more as the throne room than his living room. You know, okay. Something more ceremonial is what I would be thinking of, but I have no proof of that. Okay. So I was going to make a little bit of a start on the next story, but on the whole, given that we're off for the next two Thursdays, it's probably best that we pause here. So please, you know, don't forget everything we've been doing because we have so much happening in this parak that we need to understand. What we're going to see next, we saw Yonatan apparently take David's side against his father. Next, we're going to see Michal take David's side against her father. So this is going to be very interesting. I wish everybody a Chag Kasher v'Sameach in good health.